Welcome to Hometown to Hollywood podcast. My guest today on Hometown to Hollywood is Dove Cameron. Dove is best known for her roles on Liv and Maddie, playing both Liv and Maddie, Disney Descendants 1 and 2 as Mal, Barely Lethal as Liz Larson, and she will play Amber Von Tussel in the upcoming Hairspray Live on NBC in December. Full disclosure, she's also my daughter.
Hey!
Dove, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Mom.
This is fun. This is so weird and cool.
I'm laughing.
I know.
I keep forgetting that this isn't a print interview. I actually have to be, like, conscious of how I sound.
You know, you can just sound like yourself.
I have to be conscious of how I sound. You're such an eloquent speaker.
You're a pretty eloquent kid. So, I'm going to ask you some of the questions that I ask all of the young actors on the show here. And the first one is, when do you think you knew that you really wanted to be an actor? Do you remember when that was?
I mean, honestly, I don't really remember, like, ever. I don't know. It's like, when do you remember what your first word was? It's like, I don't know. I was just kind of always speaking. I was just kind of always wanting to be an actor. There was definitely a time where I had, like, a bigger melting pot of career options, as you know. Like, I sort of was like, maybe I want to do fashion design. And there was even a time where I was like, maybe I want to be a lawyer. And, you know, when you're younger, the possibilities of doing all three are totally viable. And so I was going to be a fashion designer, lawyer, actor on the side. I don't know when that really took precedent. I think there was a time when, honestly, I went through a bit of a sort of like a childhood to teenhood depression, which I think a lot of really creative, intelligent kids go through, because it's just really difficult to grapple with all of your feelings, plus all of the new lessons, plus all of the hormones and the changing and the, you know, it's just that moodiness that can dip into depression sometimes. And I've seen it a lot in young kids. And I would just stay up all night watching films, and that was the only thing that interested me. I would only watch films or television, and a lot of my cultural references and life lessons that I would talk to you about. You'd be like, where'd you learn that? And I'd be like, oh, this show, or oh, that movie. And I just started to notice that that was the literal only thing that I cared about. And so that was what I, that was what took up 100% of my brain. And that was what I wanted to take up 100% of my life. You know, I don't think it was ever a decision. It was just, I just knew that. And then obviously when I can, it's so funny, I'm like talking to a bunch of strangers, but talking to my mom. So like when I convinced you to move to LA at 14, I don't really remember that time with much clarity. But I remember that I knew that that's what I wanted to do. And I had known that for a long time, you know. So, I don't know. I don't think there was ever a time when I had decided to do it. It was just something I always was going to do.
I know that when you were really pretty young, you were begging me to get you into the theater, the local theater we had.
Right, and, like seven, and I don't know why.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
I also remember resisting it for as long as I could.
Well, that's because you were in the theater.
I was.
And you knew what it was like. Theater can sometimes be a bit dangerous. Not really, but a lot of thespians can be pretty intense. I think I probably wanted to get into the theater because you and Claire were doing it. And I was just, like, it was either, like, I wanted to be like you or I wanted to compete with you. I don't know. I was always very, like, out to prove myself in terms of, like, I can run with the adults, I can run with the best of them, I am an unstoppable force of nature, and I just needed to be doing what the adults were doing. But then what got me into film and television, yeah, I swear, it was just that I had my own laptop and I had access to all of those things and all of the very legal streaming that I was doing, watching all of the, yeah, everything. I used to just go on IMDb and, you know, become obsessed with an actor or an actress and watch everything that they did.
So was there any particular actor or actress who inspired you?
I think actor probably was Stanley Tucci. I was really obsessed with him. I had like an actor crush on him. even though that's probably weird for listeners to hear a 14-year-old brain say that. I'm 20 now, you guys, but I was 14 then. And I was obsessed with Stanley Tucci. I was obsessed with everything that he did. I just thought that his characters were so different. And I'm constantly looking to get a grasp on things. Like, the way that my brain works is I will try to relearn and relearn and relearn and relearn a lesson until I can get a grasp on it. And so I don't really let anything go until I have fully gotten a grasp on something. And that's kind of how I feel about actors. Like, the only actors that can keep me interested and guessing are when I have, like, every time I see them in a new role, I'm like, you didn't do that one last time. You weren't like that last time. Like, there is never an end to what you do. There is never an end to the way that your brain works. And those are my favorite kinds of actors. So I was obsessed with Stanley Tucci because he'd never played the same role twice. And I felt like I was watching a different man every time. And he really inspired me. I don't know who else. I'm trying to think of actresses. I mean, Jessica Lange mm-hmm. was that way for me, but that was kind of later. That was after I moved to LA.
You had a little Kristen Stewart obsession when you were younger.
I did have a Kristen Stewart obsession. I think that's because I had a really big girl crush on her, though. Like, she was so boyish, and I was like, you're so hot. But she... I had a big Kristen Stewart face, more so in the sense that I wanted to be her. Mm. Like, you know, I would, like, scrunch up my hair like her and, like, you know, like, take on her affectations and, like, talk like Kristen Stewart and wear her Ray-Bans and stuff like that. I don't think that was so much, like, I watched her work as much as it was. I was just fascinated by her as a person. I would watch interviews with her a lot. I didn't really have that many... And this is funny, I talk about this a lot, actually, in interviews. I didn't have that many actresses who I looked up to. Most of my acting and the acting that I modeled myself after was men. And I don't know why that is. I love women. I'm a girl's girl. I honestly just think that in this industry, women oftentimes have to pigeonhole themselves into being... Not all the time. I have my favorite actresses now, but at the time, I couldn't find any who hadn't pigeonholed themselves into, you know, smaller, meek roles and, you know, had to be soft and be even when girls are strong and independent, even when they're written well, oftentimes who Hollywood will cast are the less interesting girls, the ones who are more relatable or easier to break apart or understand, because women have this role of... Even in film and television, oftentimes women have this weird role as we want to see them as caretakers, or we want to see them as basic archetypes, and men don't really have that. And so that's definitely something that I've tried to embody so far in my very, very, very limited career playing, you know, not the most crazy broad characters, but that's something that I try to bring to my characters is a sort of a lack of archetype or a sort of a lack of... consistency or a lack of gender, you know, like I can move like a woman. I can speak with a woman's voice, but the way that I, you know, that I move my features or the thought process behind my eyes, like I tend to try to be fairly gender neutral because those are the more interesting people. Like I don't walk around in the world like a girl and I don't want my characters to either. My characters are just people. And so I watch myself embody a lot of David Tennant's acting or, you know, stuff like that, where I play my girls like guys, and I think that gives them more flexibility and more interesting traits. And I love to see men who portray themselves, you know, in slightly feminine ways as well. Those are the actors I'm most drawn, obviously, Stanley Tucci and, you know, David Tennant. It's like that sort of gender neutral brain, like where you're not playing a gender. It's much more interesting to watch.
I agree. When people ask you how you got started in the business, what story do you tell? Do you say, well, I started doing community theater when I was 8, which is true, or do you think, well, the business is really when we moved down to LA and I started doing stuff here? How would you say you got started?
Typically when children ask me, like when little kids, maybe under the age of 10, say, when did you start acting? I will say theater because that's usually what they have access to, and that's true, and I want them to... take theater seriously in terms of a training ground. And it is honestly just much easier to get into community theater than it is to get into sort of the Hollywood circles. Simply because there are just more community theaters than there is a Hollywood.
Yeah, well, there's a community theater in almost every community, whereas you have to come to Los Angeles to have access to Hollywood, basically.
Right, and so if kids are like, hey, how did you get your start? I want to give them a piece of advice that they can put into action, because obviously they're asking me for a reason. Mm-hmm. And so if I say I started in community theater, which is true, it can sometimes inspire them to enroll in community theater. And I've gotten a lot of kids telling me that. They're like, I started in community theater because of you, and I'm hoping to become an actor like you. And, you know, I mean, if an industry professional is like, when did you start? I'm probably going to say my first TV credit.
Yeah.
But
which was not until you were 15.
Right, right. And so you know, it depends on who's asking, and both are real answers, depending on who you're talking to.
Yeah. What, veering out of the industry a little bit and back into just you as a person, what was your school experience like? Kids are always asking about that, and it's important to, you know, share that, I think, so that they can not feel so alone if theirs is a little bit different, too.
Right. Well, let me give you the breakdown of my schooling experience. First of all, my dad told me that Johnny Depp, I think, A, didn't go to college, and then B, never finished high school or something like that.
I don't know. I can't fact check that right now.
Okay. Well, maybe fact check it later, but I think that's true. And ever since my dad told me that, I was like, whatever. I don't mean to discount school. It's just that my brain never, ever, 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 ever gelled well with school. And you can back me up on this. You're my mom.
Yeah, we started having issues with you in school in first grade.
I was a very headstrong, individual thinker, and I really didn't like that teachers thought they could tell me what to do. And so I kind of would, in rebellion, just sit in the back of the class and not listen to anything, because I really didn't like that they were teaching me. I think, you know, my dad had a lot to do with this. He would always tell me, like, schools are, you know, all teaching the same thing all the way across America, and, like, it's not even individually tailored, so, sweetheart, you have no reason to, you know, twist yourself into the ideals of whatever. And so I just never really fit in with school. It never really was, you know, it felt like someone was speaking a different language to me. And so I learned more through experiences with people and travel and talking and listening. I was such a listener. And you know, I loved words and I loved to write and I loved a lot of things that are not only things that you can learn in school. And so I always like to preface what I'm about to say by telling people that, like, I really am an autodidact. I really am very curious. I love to read and look into things and learn facts. And I also have the memory. Once you tell me something, I will never, ever forget it. And I'll never forget the intonation of which you told me it in. So I never really had a problem with my strange schooling pattern, but basically I went to kindergarten, I went to half of first grade, my teacher and I didn't get along, and so I dropped out halfway through first grade.
We homeschooled you.
Yeah, I know, okay, you don't like dropped out. My mom doesn't like dropped out. I dropped out of first grade. I was a problem child. But I dropped out of first grade. I was homeschooled for the second half of first grade and then the first half of second. And then I was like, I don't have any friends. And so I went to the second half of second grade in public school. And then I did third grade in public school, fourth grade in public school, fifth grade in public school, sixth grade in public school. Mm-hmm. Although I only really went to like half the days of school because we were traveling so much. And honestly, my dad would literally just be like, do you want to stay home and eat toast? And I'd be like, yeah. And he would always be like, oh, those grades don't matter anyway.
Your dad and I had a different opinion about school a lot of the time.
Right. But then I, you know, went to half of seventh grade and I was being really, really, really severely bullied. And so again, dropped out, was homeschooled for the second half of seventh. And then I took a placement test.
Yeah, you took the Iowa test, which is not placement. It's about achievement. It's about measuring what you actually have learned.
Right. And so then I finished seventh grade, and then they were like, oh, well, you've basically learned everything you need to learn for eighth grade too, so you can skip eighth grade. And then I technically did ninth grade online. But like, not really, you guys.
Barely.
And then I took a placement test. I did take a placement test. And then it was like, you should be in college, but you can't skip more than one grade.
Yeah.
And so then they placed me in 10th. And I did...
Because you had the credits to do that, too.
Right. And I did 10th and 11th in public high school in Burbank.
Correct.
And then I graduated a year early. So if you have an odd schooling pattern because you are a young actor, don't worry about it. You can go to college anytime, and all of us actors have weird schooling pasts, I promise you guys.
So related to that, do you ever wish that you'd had a more normal childhood or schooling situation?
Yeah,
I do.
Do
you feel like you missed out?
Well, here's the thing. What I really feel like I missed out on was a community. I really feel like I missed out on a social circle, you know, knowing people from kindergarten to seniors in high school, and then like having that hard time leaving for college and going to the same place every day and missing the school walls and knowing the teachers by their first name. Like, I really miss that experience. And I also miss, you know, I really wish I'd gone to college. I wish I'd gone and lived in a dorm, even though everybody's like, no, you don't. No, I want the bad experience. I want the bad experience of living in a dorm and having to deal with my dorm mate and hating them. And, you know, like, I wanted the normalcy, but it didn't fit in with the other life that I wanted more. And also, the time that I did spend in school, there wasn't anybody else like me in school. And nobody liked me. And every friend I tried to make didn't understand me. And they all kind of excluded me because I was very artistic and odd. I was always a very odd kid. And I would go so far as to say, I think a lot of people might be like, wow, you have an ego. But no, I think this is very truthful. I was always a very intelligent kid. Like, I really, really was pretty advanced for every age that I was. And a lot of teachers and a lot of other kids didn't like that. And I'm saying this because I've met so many special, intelligent, advanced, incredible, impressive children through being in the industry and meeting these people who come to the live tapings and my fan signings, and I see them and they're so special and they're so different and they're so charismatic, and they say, I don't have any friends. And I say, oh my God, of course you don't. Of course you don't. And that's no reason to be sad. That just means that you're going to find your community later in life, and you have the brains to know that that's going to happen for you, and you don't have to worry or lament. Like, there's so many kids out there that are special and different, and they get bullied and they get left out and they don't have friends, and they become the most incredible adults. So I always want to say that. And, like, you hear that all the time. People in the industry were really bullied and had no friends in school because they're different. And if you're listening to this, you're different. And I just want you to know, like, that's okay. You're going to be okay. And, like, everything's fine. And people can hate you all they want. And you get to live your dream. So that's
that. And just be patient. Have faith.
Yeah, exactly. That is something I'm so passionate about speaking about, is to those kids who... Because I came home so many times from school and talked to you. I was like, Mom, boys don't like me. I've never had a boyfriend. Girls all hate me. Like, no one will look twice at me. Not even the freaks like me. Like, you know, there's always that, like, weird section of kids where you're like, maybe I'm going to be one of the weird kids. And the weird kids are like, you're way too weird for us. So, you know, I always want to speak to those young minds who are so concerned with that, because, I mean, Lord knows I was concerned with that.
Well, it's hard. I was lonely.
I was a lonely kid. And now I have a great adult life. So
that's beautiful. I know that that's true, and I love the message that you deliver with it. Speaking of school and going back to acting, how did you balance the school and the acting thing? How did that work for you?
It didn't work well. A lot of teachers take it personally when you miss school to act, because I think, you know, a lot of people want to be in this industry, and obviously this is a very truthful podcast. No interviewer is editing this, editing out the crazy parts that I assure you are in every single interview I've ever done. but, you know, teachers typically, a lot of teachers don't like when kids get involved in this industry, because a lot of people want to be doing what the people who are listening to this are doing. You know, you guys who are interested in becoming actors or have kids who want to be actors, a lot of people obviously want to be in this industry. Either for the right reasons or the wrong reasons or whatever reasons, but a lot of teachers see it as sort of an insult, sort of like a goodbye to education and a hello to a fantasy land. I ran into that a lot. A lot of teachers said some pretty incredible things for an adult to say to a young mind that don't need to be mentioned here, but a lot of teachers sort of tried to stop me from pursuing this, And basically, in a nutshell, and I can think of literally four or five different teachers who told me this. Basically, like, I'm throwing my life away and education is the only answer, and how dare I, you know, insist on living a life otherwise. And I wouldn't be surprised if your kid or if you are the one who's pursuing a life in acting, I wouldn't be surprised if you ran into that as well. And not to turn this into a soapbox, but, like, they're so wrong. They're so wrong. You know, that's obviously not easy to hear, and obviously they're incredibly sad minds to try to be putting a child down, but I wouldn't enter into the school versus industry conversation with open arms. I would definitely enter into it cautiously, and because teachers have the power to fail you. Like, I was getting failed. Because even if I was staying on top of my studies, I would miss enough school, and the teachers would get angry, and they would literally just fail me. You definitely have an opportunity to run into that. Even in LA, I was going to high school in Burbank when that was happening. Although I have heard of some teachers being really supportive and letting you do your homework on the side, homeschooling is always a fantastic option. Or there are certain, like, actor high schools. I was going to public high school, you have to know. But there are certain, like, actor high schools that are sort of designed so that you can be doing that. And a lot of my friends went there, like Olivia Holt and I think Zendaya and a lot of other Disney kids went to that one high school. I always forget the name of that.
We can't mention the name anyway, just for safety reasons.
Oh, okay. Never mind.
Bye. But there are, like, schools, hybrid sorts of schools in the LA area that specialize in young actors, and they're super friendly to the situation that you're in. And
yeah.
You were at Burbank High because we were actually both of us thinking that a more normal situation
that they would understand.
Oh, well.
I'm not going to mention his name, but Mr. French teacher who hated me so much. He's not listening to this. He doesn't care.
So, speaking of education and training and that sort of thing, as an actor and as a singer, how important has training been for you? What's that look like for you?
I get pretty divided on this because I think a lot of people, I've seen a lot of people, proof, like I have seen a lot of people change the way that they approach their craft. I hate that word, their craft, but they change a lot. It's like so pretentious. But they change, you know, their level of involvement, finesse, talent, I don't know, with acting class and voice lessons. And I have talked to enough people where I have been bold enough to be like, it doesn't matter, do whatever you want, you know, who cares, you're born with it. And I've spoken to enough people who would just slam me down for that and be like, you don't understand what it did for me. That now I can recognize and see what a difference it can make for a lot of people. Again, I am not the kind of person who works well in a class environment. And so I took a couple acting classes, and I was, I'm not ADHD, but I'm something. And so I definitely was sort of like, all right, I want to absorb 10 classes in one class, and this is moving too slow for me, and I have to wait around, and I don't like this, and I want to jump up and down and learn really quick, and I want to learn at my own pace. And so I peaced out pretty quick. And I basically just, like, sat at home and watched movie after movie after movie and studied the people that I respected. But that's not everybody. And I've spoken to a lot of people also who are like, you don't need class, whatever. So I do think that's an individual thing. I think you should try a couple classes with some well-respected acting teachers. You know, look it up first because there can be a lot of sketchy people. But look up, you know, look up who's well-respected. Look up who agents like. And that may take a little digging, but it's definitely easy to find via a couple of Google clicks. In terms of voice lessons, I do think they are always helpful. People who I know now who have been singing and working for 40 years in this industry still take voice lessons. Kristen Chenoweth takes voice lessons. So anybody can and should, I think, take voice lessons. If not just to protect your voice. I mean, I have to do that. I speak a lot. I speak very loudly. I kind of never shut up. And I sing a lot too. I sing as often as I speak. And I'm always like, I can hit that high note without warming up and without supporting it. No problem. 8 times in a row. Let's do it. So I definitely have to take voice lessons just to not ruin myself.
So do you remember anything about the process of finding an agent and a manager? Do you remember anything about how that went?
I remember that my mom did a lot of work. I remember I got headshots first. I got headshots first, and we sent them in to a couple. We only sent them in to, like, three agencies. And I think, honestly, I've had the same agent since I moved here when I was 14. And I haven't had to find a new one because she's so incredible, and I'm still with Youth Theatrical. Yay, babyface. But I haven't had to find a new one, and I really don't want to. If I didn't ever have to leave my agent, I would be very happy. So I don't remember too much. It was a while ago, 6 years ago. Oh my gosh, I've been with Pam for 6 years.
Almost.
Oh my god. I need to send her some flowers. But so I do know that just sending your picture in with a resume will pretty much guarantee you get put in the trash can. And again, I'm speaking very candidly, and this isn't the most kind, easygoing podcast, and I'm sorry if it's coming off as harsh. I don't mean it to. I just want to be as helpful as possible, and I do believe the truth is helpful. If you send in your photo with a resume, too many come in per day, per week, per month, and they just throw them away. Any agent would tell you the same. Because they don't have the time or the manpower to look into everybody, to call everybody in. I mean, that would just be taking endless meetings, and then their client list that they already have wouldn't get any attention. So finding a good agent is definitely difficult. It's, you know, sometimes I've heard it can be sort of like trying to climb the ranks of a job. You know, like you start out with someone who will kind of take anyone because those are the ones who will, you know, take your call. Because if you don't have any references or connections or any previous work, the only people who will take you are the people who are starting at the bottom. And that's not a comment on your talent or your looks or anything. Even if, you know, Jessica Lange had no work on her resume when she first started. So, you know, I don't mean that in a personal way. I just mean that you have to start somewhere. You got to start kind of at the bottom and then work your way up through agencies, I've heard, by proving yourself and, you know, kicking booty on your auditions and booking stuff and all that. It definitely does help to have connections. It sounds really shady when I say that, but otherwise an agent won't know, you know, if you have somebody who can call in and vouch for your talent, an agent would take that much more seriously. And it's sad, but it's definitely true. I don't remember what we did.
That's about what happened. We were getting nowhere with
yeah, the it was whole like, it
sending the headshot
months.
Thing. It had been months. I was starting to really freak out, and I called the one industry contact we had, who was, you know, someone who directed you and coached you
in community theater.
In community theater, everybody.
By the way,
that's right, and had been one of your mentors, who was one of the people who convinced me that I should take you seriously, you know, as a talent and come down here, you know.
Shout out to you, Dinah Manoff. You are the MVP, Dinah Manoff.
She really is. And I called her. I said, I don't know what to do. This is getting nowhere. I'm thinking I'm in trouble.
Mistake.
I might have made a mistake by coming down here without an agent. And she asked who we were looking at, and I gave her the three names, which was, of course, crazy and ambitious already. She knew one. She made a phone call. We got a phone call. You had a meeting within 15 minutes. It was incredible.
Yeah. But then, of course, you know, once you get so... It's really hard to get a good agent, you guys. It's really hard. It's like finding a good, straight boyfriend. It's like finding a good man. I feel like I'm in Steel Magnolias.
But it's a relationship.
It is. But then also, you get the meeting, and then you have to razzle dazzle. Like, I remember I went all over town to find the right shoes to meet my agent, or to meet my potential agent, and I got all dressed up, and you know, you gotta get that monologue all memorized. I actually do remember that. I remember that meeting very vividly. Oh my god, I was terrified. I was so nervous. I think I was beet red. I was just blushing so hard. I was so scared. Because we'd waited for months. But yeah, so you gotta really, it's like an audition. You know, once you get the meeting, there's no dancing around it. It's not like, you're fine, they'll love you no matter or what? Like, you gotta really fight for it. Because they got a long client list. And one thing that a lot of people, you know, won't tell you about Hollywood, or maybe they will, but it's sad, but it's true, especially these days. If you have a similar face to somebody that they already have on their roster, even if you're the most talented kid or person in the world, they might not take you just based on that. Because so many breakdowns these days are like, you know, calling for a 5'3", long black hair, big eyes, you know, or calling for a 6'7", blonde, tan. Like, so many are based on physical attributes. And so if they already have 15 other people that look like you, I mean, that's another huge trap that people can fall into. It's like, you know, you can be the most, like I said, you can be like an Oscar-worthy performer, and some agencies just might not take you because they already have someone who's your height. Like, and it can be very hard. And there's kind of no getting around that. You just got to keep going to different agencies until you find a place that you fit.
Yeah, and then as you said, maybe make your way up, you know, over time.
Yeah, exactly. And this is kind of terrifying, but if you treat every single experience like a test... I used to tell myself that, which is a little scary for a 14-year-old to be like, everything is a test. But, like, I would imagine that every single room I walked into was like taking a test, you know, like taking a math test or something. And I would try to ace every single one. I would try to do every single thing right because it's bettering your chances. You know, it's like putting more tickets into whatever. Like, you know, when people are drawing tickets, if you put in 8, you're more likely to get one pulled than if you put in 1. Like, you just do as much as you can, as best as you can, for as long as you can, and you'll succeed.
I love that. What about some auditioning advice? Any auditioning advice?
Yes! Oh, so much auditioning advice. First of all, always bring your headshot and resume, because I have been sassed so hard, and I'm not gonna say by who, but I've been sassed so hard with just being like, you know, if you don't have your headshot and resume, go home and come back when you have one. I don't care if your appointment's at 4. Like, some people just won't take you. So always have your headshot and resume. I would say, personally, print your headshot in color. I just made my mom laugh really hard, but she's doing it quietly. But I just think that these days a color headshot is definitely in vogue, in fashion. People respond better to it. You know... Don't take yourself too seriously. It's a good balance between doing everything perfectly. And if you forget your lines and you mess up, you can totally go back and do it again. That's not what I mean. It's not like, be a robot in the room. But, like, you know, when you walk in, say hi to the casting director. Be personable, but don't be too personable. Because I've made this mistake, too. And I'm like, where are you from? What are your hobbies? Mine, too. I like your highlights. They're like, okay, sit down, do what you're supposed to do, and then get out. But, like, so, you know, just be personable. Ask them how their day is. You'll definitely stick out more than the people who don't do that. People respond to nice people. And casting directors are people, too. I would say bring your sides with you, because no matter how much you think you're off book, you probably will... Well, you're likely to forget. I still forget my lines in auditions. And they will be much more forgiving if you just look down rather than having to get up and leave the room and get your stuff. Obviously, turn your phone off, all that stuff. And try to be different. I would say try to be different. I remember booking Barely Lethal... And I went in, and I had a lot of coffee that day, but I remember meeting my director, Kyle Newman, for the first time, and I was obsessed with him because he's like a 14-year-old in an adult's body. But I remember he was like, just, like, mess around. Like, impress me. Do something different. I was like, okay. And so I, like, sat up on the chair, and I, like, got up, and the whole audition, my girl was very frantic. Or that's how I thought she was, at least. And so the whole time, I was sitting up on the back of the chair, and then sitting back down, and then crossing my legs. And then I would get up, and I would lean on the chair, and then I would run around, and then I'd sit on the floor. And he was like, you realize I can't tape you if you're doing that. And I was like, yeah, but I could tell that you liked it, so I kept doing it. Like, you know, you gotta do something that the girl who just left, and do something that the girl who's coming after you is not gonna do, or the guy, you know, I'm speaking as me, but do something different. And that doesn't mean come in wearing an eye patch. Don't do that. But just, like, make weird choices. Make something that the casting director hasn't seen, because that's what they're looking for. If they're looking for something that they've seen a million times already, they would have chose the person 10 people ago. They're looking for something to blow their minds and to be different, so be different.
I love it. That's perfect. So what has surprised you about this whole adventure so far? You landed here 6 years ago. What has been surprising to you?
What's been surprising to me, I guess, I mean, how second nature it was for me was very surprising, because the industry is such a scary thing. It's like the industry, like it sounds like some kind of clan or something. Like it sounds like some kind of Doctor Who alien sect, like the industry. And I'm just surprised at how I've been able to adapt to it, because from the outside it does sort of seem like this crazy conspiracy theory world, when really it's just like a bunch of crazy people, and if you're crazy you'll fit in just fine. And so it surprised me that I haven't, you know, gone off some deep end, or, you know, everybody talks about like losing yourself to Hollywood. I really feel like I haven't changed really at all. I've definitely, you know, I can't believe how many amazing, incredible minds I've been able to meet through this. Like, so many crazy artists who are so brilliant and beyond, you know, just, like, human capacities. Like, I just meet so many incredible people in this industry, and I guess I am surprised about that. I'm surprised by... I mean, so much. I'm surprised by how much I've learned about myself through being different people. That was the reason that I always wanted to be an actor, was I, you know, it's like self-exploration and also understanding other people better, because when you, the practice of getting into the mind of someone who's not you, who hasn't shared your same experiences, is so bettering as a person, because then you do the same thing daily with people walking around in the world, and it makes you much more empathetic and sympathetic and thoughtful and, you know, sort of slower to react to things. It's like sharpening, your brain is a tool, and acting definitely sharpens your brain. And I think a lot of people do get lost in this industry, when they make it about something other than, you know, like bettering themselves and keeping a real eye on the fact that this isn't real life. You know, but if you do, if you keep your eyes open, if you look at yourself every day in the mirror and you still see that middle schooler, and you keep in mind that this is a huge experience, just like life is, and it's just like you keep your eye, like one hand on your heart and then one hand reaching out in front of you for anything that's trying to trip you up. And you focus on the good people that you meet, and the smart people, and the sweet people, and the kind people, and the people who are in it because they're artists and it's interesting to them, and it betters their relationship with themselves and other people and their family and their life and, you know, their faith, maybe even, like, those people are in this industry. So I'm surprised by that as well, that, like, it's not, they make it seem like Hollywood is full of snakes, and in the sense that everywhere is full of snakes, sure, Hollywood has snakes in it, and, you know, so does any other place you're gonna go. And, you know, lawyers are snakes, some of them. A lot of my families are lawyers, so I some of them are amazing people. But you know what I mean? Like, any profession can have snakes in it, but don't let negative people deter you from being in this incredible industry. You can have a real life in it, and I guess that's what I'm most surprised about, is you can have a real life in something that is so... malleable and ever-changing. You can have a community, and you can know yourself, and you can be stable. You don't have to be like what everybody says it's like in here. It's not really like that, if you're not really like that.
I love that. What do you think at this point of your life? Now, you're quite young still. You're only 20. But so far, what do you think is important and not important for success?
What do I think is important and not important for success? Well... not important is, obviously, I'm totally stealing this from the documentary Happy, and if you haven't seen it, you have to watch it. And I'm not going to fully do it justice, but not important is fame, money, and I forget what the third one is that's like, these are the things that people... oh, popularity. But I guess those are, you know, fame and popularity are kind of the same thing. But if you are in this industry because you think it's going to fill some hole in you, or you want to make money, or you want to be on a private jet, or be on a, you know, whatever, like a yacht with a model or whatever, like, there are people who are doing that, and I cannot speak to their quality of life. But for me, if I look at myself as a measure of success, which I do. I feel very successful, not in a cocky way in the sense that, like, I'm so successful, like, I'm so famous, I'm like Cher or Britney or whatever. I'm not at all. I'm not like anybody in the same way that you're not like anybody. And I'm not the most famous or the most rich or the most high on IMDb. I'm not. And I may not ever be. And that's not what I'm aiming for. That's not what I was ever aiming for. My measure of success is stability. you know, spend a large percentage of your time working, because obviously that is a measure of success, is when people want to work with you. A huge measure of success for me has been when I walk away from a project and people speak well of me. Like, you know, they say, I genuinely want to work with you again, and I suggested you to this person, and I just think that you're very kind and you're very hardworking and you mean well and you have a good conscience. That's a huge measure of success for me, is when somebody comes up to me and says, you know, I was just talking to this person last week and they said you are such a good person and a hard worker and you led that set well. That's my biggest measure of success, is when, you know, I leave a project well, when I leave it better than when it started. And I've only ever worked with actors who are the same way. And it is a big team effort. You know, it's not just your job to do that. But that's, to me, is probably one of the biggest measures of success, is when you treat those around you who you work with well, from the grips to the director to, you know, props and set deck and everybody and actors, like any everybody. And then also, yeah, I don't know if I said this, but like happiness. When you come home at the end of every day and you're like, woo, I did everything I could have done with that assignment. I killed it. And then you get to go to sleep and wake up and take care of yourself, and, you know, your skin isn't falling off from exhaustion. And, you know, when you have enough of yourself at the end of the day, but you left everything on the floor and you continue to work the next day and you're well respected, that's all you need for success. And that relies solely on you and what you do with your time.
I love that. What have some of your challenges been?
Some of my challenges have been not getting caught up in some industry cattiness. Because I am a very open person. I'm obviously a very talkative person. I have boundless, boundless energy. some would say it's too much. And I don't really believe in hierarchies or, you know, being higher or better or worse or lower than other people. I never really have. And a lot of people have a huge problem with that. Like a really big problem with that. And it started, you know, when I was in school, when my teachers thought that they were more important than a 7-year-old because they had the power. And it's always people who want to have power. I don't mean any disrespect. Like, everybody has their own brain, their own experiences, their own life that they want to lead and the way that they want to do it. And I'm not saying that my way of doing it is better or worse. It's just, that's just my way of doing it. And I have definitely stepped onto some sets or met some people who do not agree with my way of doing it. I believe that everybody's equal. I believe that if you're an extra on set or you're the lead and you've worked on 20 films this year, or, you know, you get paid 8 times more than an actor who's working more than you or whatever. Like, I don't think that anybody is better than anybody. And that has kept me really happy, because I don't want to be better than anybody. Oh my God, I don't want to be better than anybody. If I came home at the end of the day and my sense of satisfaction was because I was better or higher or more important or more rich or whatever than that person, how sad would I be? That's not where my value comes from. And so, you know, I run into some problems with that. Problems when some people maybe think I'm out of my place or something to believe we're all equal. That's definitely been a challenge for me that I have had to adhere to, and I've learned that lesson. You know, I definitely was a little excited when I first started in the industry, and it's a sad truth. You do kind of have to enter every set with caution and you know, be a little bit quiet until you find your place. Or not, you know, it depends. If you want your experience to be that you're utterly comfortable from the first second you step on set, and if somebody has a problem with that, whatever, live your life. If you're not doing any harm and you're just having a good time, like, live your life, you know? But if you want, if you want there to be no problems, I would say enter every set with caution and feel the temperature before you just sort of let loose and be yourself all over everybody.
Brilliant, hard-earned advice.
Oh my God. My mom is sitting over here giving me so many looks. I don't know. I just believe that bugs are equal to clouds, are equal to animals, are equal to the president, and that's just how I feel, and I don't know. I don't know why you would want to feel otherwise, but that was my biggest lesson, I think.
So, if you weren't an actor or a singer, what would you do? What would you be doing with your life, do you think?
I think if I weren't an actor or a singer, I would go to FITM or RISD or some kind of, you know, fashion school, and I would try to educate myself as best as possible in that industry, because it really is a separate, very different industry that I was really close to, you know, diving straight into. I don't know how much relevance it still has to my life. I think I would love to do a fashion line one day, because I definitely still wake up at 3:30 in the morning and I'm like, what? I have to have this garment that I just dreamed about, and then I look for it and I can't find it and I'm like, I must create it. And of course I never do, because I don't have the time and I don't have the, you know, drive, and I'm lazy. But I have a lot of ideas, and my ideas are very detailed, and I would love it if my career gave way to other mini careers. But I think that might be what I was doing if I wasn't doing this. I also really could see myself in law school. Like, I really, really could see myself in law school. If it's something that I'm interested in learning about, you can't stop me from learning about it and learning about it really quickly. Like, I do dive head first into things. I don't know how to speak anymore. But I could really see myself doing that. I love to play with other people's brains. I love to solve things. I love to argue. I love to talk. And also, I really love to help people. Recently, and I know that I'm not the only opinion. I know that I'm you know, this is a very popular opinion right now, but because of everything going on with politics and how incredibly heightened this race is, and, you know, because this is going to be the first election I can vote in legally. I'm an adult now, and how crazy incredible is it that this is the first race I can vote in? Like, oh my God, I get so fired up about it. But I've taken a huge interest in politics, and I was actually just talking to Ryan about this. We were in a cab in New York doing press for the band, The Girl in the Dreamcatcher, and I was like, I swear, I might abandon acting when I'm in my, like, 30s or 40s to dive headfirst into politics, because I thought it was such a world that was so inaccessible to me when I was younger, and I didn't get it, and I didn't care to, and whatever. It wasn't interesting to me. I don't know. And then it was like I turned 18, and I was suddenly, like, politics, and I couldn't learn enough about it, and I couldn't listen to enough speeches, and I couldn't fact check enough things, and I couldn't read about enough articles, and I don't know, I just really, really want to. And also, it's like, we get so wrapped up in, sorry, this is hometown to Hollywood, not hometown to the White House, but we all, as a nation, and as a people, and as a culture, and as a world, get so wrapped up in, like, this person versus this person, and this point versus this point, when we really forget, like, the purpose of a president is to represent the people and to do right by the people and to make a huge difference and to do good and to fix stuff. And that is, I mean, I couldn't want to do something more than, and I'm not saying I'm going to run for president. Everyone on the other side of this is like, ha ha, yeah, right, little Disney star. I know. Everything is stacked against me in the world. But, like, you know, Congress, like, something. I just like to do good on the biggest scale that you can in this country. Like, oh, that sounds amazing. So yeah, anyway, I think I might take a pause on the acting front and really dive into politics in a couple years. Like, I haven't been so jazzed about something in a long time.
Well, speaking of Disney, really quick, you're about to go off and shoot Descendants 2.
Woo!
Any advice for kids?
Speaking of politics.
Any advice for kids who want to be on the channel?
Any advice for kids who want to be on Disney? It's so funny. Like, I wanted to be on Disney so bad when I was younger. I think it's kind of like a rite of passage. Like, every kid... I mean, not every kid. I don't want to pigeonhole you. I don't know who I'm talking to. But I definitely did. And I know a lot of young actors who were like, Disney Channel! And you know, you better believe that I don't forget that I'm still living out my childhood dream. Like, I don't ever wake up and I'm like, oh, go to my boring job. Like, I love Disney. I love the company. I love the people I work for. I love what I do with my days. It's definitely very long days. What I have to tell you is Disney Channel is a channel, is, you know, potentially whatever you would do with them is a TV show, is a movie franchise, is whatever. But it's a huge company. And as the listener, you have to know, if you want to work for Disney, I mean, it's not just something that you do lightly. Like, it takes up a lot of time. And I don't think people even really realize that. Like, when you're not shooting, you're doing the promotions and the advertising and the interstitials and the interviews and the music videos and the everything else. That's why it has such incredible exposure, unlike anybody else. It's because they generate more content than anybody else. And, you know, if that's the life that you want, it's the best life that you can sign on for if that's what you want. But if you also want to be doing other things, or, you know, you want to be going to school, or you want a slower start, it's definitely something that you have to know what you're getting into. The company has always treated me incredibly well. You know, they've never done anything, you know, that I was less than happy with, and they really do treat you like family, but it is long hours, you know, you have to know. If you're interested in signing on for that, now that I have told you, I don't even know. They have really big casting calls, obviously. Disney's great that way, where they will go to a lot of, like, big cities, and you can drive to those. They have those every once in a while where they do huge cattle calls. And I would just say for those, you better stay on top of it and be one of the first in line, because so many people there, you know, I don't know if they get to everybody.
I don't know, but I do have a link on my website in the resources page for where you can find the one legitimate source for those
cattle calls. Yeah. Awesome. Yeah, so go check that out, you guys. You know, Disney, like I said, also generates a lot of content, so they're constantly auditioning for new projects. So click on that website, the website that is verified on my mom's page. And also, if you already have an agent, tell them that you want to go for Disney Channel. I mean, they probably already have their finger on the pulse of that, because Disney's constantly, you know, 14 to 18, that goes quick. So they are always looking for new talent, new bright faces. And I could not speak more to the generosity and good quality of the company. Like, you know, I really, really, if you want that start, if you want that huge kickstart, that sort of like nose to the grindstone 4 years of education in the industry, I could not recommend them more. I mean, it sounds like I'm recommending like a Jamba Juice or something, but like it's the best job in the world if that's what you want.
And then what about advice for kids who want this life?
Advice for kids who want this life. Stay close to your family. Definitely. Know who your friends are before you get into the industry, but also be open to meeting new friends in the industry. It can be a very lonely crowd, being a working actor child. And trust your gut. Definitely, there are going to be probably some people or situations where you're like, oh, I don't know how I feel about this. Trust that. Trust that gut. If you don't think someone's a real friend to you, don't keep them in your life. It's a very, you know, this industry, like I said, is ever-changing. It's very stop and go. And you can kind of tailor it to the life that you want, you know, once you get to a certain point. And constantly keep an eye on your levels of exhaustion. I have worked myself into exhaustion before by saying yes to too much. And that be honest with the people who you're working with and with your family and those around you and those who love you. Mm-hmm. Be honest with your commitments, what you can really do, what you don't think you really can. Because it's a lot better for your agents, your managers, the people who you're working for at the time, to work you an hour less a day or not do that commitment on Saturday or not schedule, you know, your whatever for really early in the morning and have you work all year than it is for them to work you really, 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 really hard because you say you can do it and then you have to take a 3 to 6 month break just to recover. This industry looks easy to some. I don't know I don't know what your opinions are, but I definitely thought it looked easy. It's not easy. It's not easy. It's sort of like, you know, what everyone will tell you is it's like running a marathon. And you got to start slow as you can. People are going to want to rush you into it. You're going to want to keep an eye on, your health, how you feel, what you're thinking too. Because if enough, this is huge. Like if so many people are going to put some pretty objectifying ideas in your head. You know, kids in the industry oftentimes are not raised simply because they don't have a normal childhood. They're not raised with the same fundamental, like, this is how you go from a child to an adult. This is how you maintain functionality. This is how you maintain healthy thoughts, how you don't think of yourself as a product. This is how you maintain sanity. And no one is going to be pushing you to work less. No one is going to be pushing you to be more normal. And so it's your job, and especially the parents listening to this, it is your job to save your child. It's your job to keep your kid normal and healthy and happy, because no one in the industry is going to be doing that for them. And you can work with the best people around, and you know, they're going to do their job and then they're going to go home to their families. You have to take care of yourself and you got to take care of your kids, because it can definitely affect you in more ways than I think anybody thinks. But if you keep your head on straight and you sort of constantly tread that water, you can learn the biggest lessons in life from this industry. It's really incredible. I do recommend this life. I do recommend this life. But it's definitely not one that you can just kind of start and let it run free. You got to keep an eye on it.
That's great. Anything else you'd like to share before we go?
No. My God, I can't believe you sat through this entire podcast. I really was like, I'm going to be brief and succinct.
I skipped a few questions.
No, I knew you did. I knew it. No, I mean, I want you to know, like, everything that I shared today was as truthful as I could possibly be. And some of that stuff is maybe like nicer than you've heard, because some people will try to scare you, and you know, that's my real experience. Everything that I shared today has been my authentic experience. And some of the stuff was probably harsher than you've heard, but I would never want to have an opportunity to speak unedited to, you know, maybe parents who are interested with their kid getting into this, or kids who are listening to this. You know, you guys, you're so capable these days. I sound like an old woman. You're so capable these days.
We actually have a lot of college students.
Yeah.
High school and college students listening to this. Yeah.
Well, for anybody who's interested, I hope that you gleaned something from my thoughts today, and I do not in any way intend to scare you away from this industry. I actually hope that you join me, because it's incredible over here. You know, like I said, if you take care of yourself, so I hope you figure it out. I hope somebody, you know, gives you that chance. I think if you're really looking into it as hard as you must be to be listening to, you know, podcasts and reading books and doing the research, I respect the living daylights out of you, because that is part of it. So good on you for doing... That's a kitty. Good on you for doing your due diligence, and I wish you luck, and I hope to work with you one day. Yeah, I send you good vibes. Good luck. Love you guys.
Aww. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me today. I know more than anybody.
Of course, mama.
Mwah.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to Hometown to Hollywood. If you like what you heard here, please subscribe. It's free. Go to my website, hollywoodparentsguide.com, and click on the subscribe button. You'll get weekly podcasts and blog posts delivered right to your inbox that will educate and inspire you. And if you need help figuring out just how to navigate the career of a young actor, buy my book, The Hollywood Parents Guide, on Amazon. or for one-on-one coaching that can save you literally thousands of dollars and months and years of wasted time, book an hour consultation with me over Skype or in LA. Just go to HollywoodParentsGuide.com and click on the consultation page. For the same price of an hour with an acting coach, you can get peace of mind and a detailed action plan. Thanks. Remember, the future belongs to those who believe in their dreams.